Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. Each week, we provide our listeners information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and adult-use cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, local growers, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear the latest industry news and updates from the American Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis, personal success stories, and more. It's time to join the conversation. And here's your host, Dan Perkins.
This is Dan Perkins with your American Cannabis Conversation. Quick news. Springfield, Illinois. Several Illinois dispensaries have already run out of recreational cannabis product. The first day of recreational cannabis sales in Illinois generated nearly $3.2 million in sales. By the close of business on January 2nd, sales had leaped to $5.5 million. Total retail transactions are climbing into hundreds of thousands. By any measure, the start of illegal retail in Illinois has been in an absolute frenzy, and several Illinois dispensaries are already tapped out. Many shops have already run out of recreational marijuana, while others are taking the day off to give their staff a reprieve from serving thousands upon thousands of customers who've been lining up outside the doors. Dispensaries low on stock expect to resume sales to recreational customers later this week, and stores will still have flower and other products on their shelves when they reopen for business. Portland, Oregon. A new study shows students are less likely to binge drink when cannabis is legal. Problem binge drinking decreased by an average of 6% among of-age college students in states where legalized recreational marijuana was available. 10 years worth of data from the survey of the American college students with 1.1 million participants show that of-age students are less likely to binge drink where recreational cannabis is legal. That's according to a new study just published by Addictive Behaviors, one of the first to investigate how university students' substance consumption changes after states legalize recreational marijuana. Chicago, Illinois. In our last story, people are crossing the state lines to buy recreational cannabis in Illinois. Illinois neighboring states of Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, and Missouri have yet to legalize recreational marijuana, while Michigan already has cannabis consumers who are crossing state lines to visit dispensaries in Illinois, where sales of recreational marijuana have become legal on New Year's Day. Four of five states that border Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, and Missouri, have not yet legalized cannabis for recreational use. Sales of recreational marijuana began in Michigan, the remaining state that shares the border with Illinois, 1 month ago. Chelsea Solomon, an employee of Nature's Treatment of Illinois in the town of Milan, said that people were crossing the nearby Mississippi River to shop. "There's been a lot of Iowa people coming," Solomon said, adding that she expected them to keep visiting the store as long as recreational cannabis continues to be illegal in Iowa. "I mean, we're right on the border," she said. "We're going to have so many people who are going to want to be coming to our town to buy cannabis." And that's your America's Cannabis Conversation. Quick news. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's talk about who's on the conversation today. Anthony Flanis, our money guy, is going to be talking about the coming turnaround of wholesale cannabis prices and the possibility of more stability to the cannabis stocks. Next, we have Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, who's going to talk about the SAFE banking bill not making it in the compromise funding and the comments of the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee and his concerns about SAFE banking because of the lack of THC controls. Also in the program today, we will have Jared Mirsky, who will help you set priorities for your business as a startup. He'll describe processes that you need to know so you can make sure you have the least amount of mistakes in starting your business. And finally on the show today, we have NBA world champion Matt Barnes in an interview with our W420 radio correspondent Rich Wolkoff, who will be talking to Matt about his interest in cannabis and his company, Seven Leaves, which will help people understand the advantages of cannabis. This is Dan Perkins. Now let's join the conversation. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is our regular Anthony Planis from Banyan Hill Publications, and he's going to speak to us about some changes that took place over the last month in the cannabis inventory and expectations. So, Happy New Year to you, sir.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well.
Let's hope it's a prosperous New Year, too, for everybody. So, Anthony, tell us about what you're seeing or hearing about the price of the raw material and what's happening in terms of activity.
Yeah, so it's difficult to get an accurate picture for the entire nation because essentially every state is a market in and of itself. And so with product not being able to go between state lines, you have to look at each market separately. But what we do know is that summer and fall was a pretty tough time for a lot of up-and-coming cannabis producers, multi-state operators as well, where basically the cash dried up, and so plans for expansion, that includes, growing facilities and dispensaries and whatnot, those got axed. And so you have the demand, which just keeps growing. Even in states where it's legalized, we see just this steady uptick in demand year over year. And so with demand increasing and then the supply staying flat, that gives producers and operators the opportunity to raise prices in some of these cases. And I don't think it's you need to be too worrisome about it because the best fix for high prices is high prices. And so that would spur, of course, more supply onto the market. So I wouldn't get too caught up with kind of trending this out too long, you know?
So let me go back to something you just said because it sparked a thought in my mind. Each state is a separate market. There is no national market for cannabis. We had a phenomenal opening day, for example, in Illinois, where they did almost $5.5 million in recreational cannabis, and some dispensaries were running low, if not out of inventory. So if every market is a separate market, the idea of the flow of capital from one market to another, the dynamics, is it possible that the dynamics in one market may be dramatically different than another market and lots of people want to go in one and not many people want to go in the other?
Yeah, absolutely. That can absolutely happen. We've seen that with the West Coast where it's been a very competitive market. And so, prices got driven down pretty hard because there was a lot of supply that hit the market. And when you look at these big multi-state operators and their expansion plans, it almost never includes Oregon or Washington because of that reason. Just because even though overall those states do have strong demand, there's just such a flood of supply still left that people aren't looking at it as a great opportunity.
So the state may have perhaps, in the case of Washington and Oregon, issued too many licenses initially, which caused eventually when the crops were starting to be harvested, excess supply, which put a lot of pressure on the suppliers to move out the inventory. And they may have had to cut prices in order to try and generate some kind of revenue. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, exactly.
So going forward, when we look at what's going on in, say, example, Illinois, it would appear, based on the media, that investing in cannabis in Illinois might be a very attractive investment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Of course, it always depends. You have to go company by company to find the best opportunities. But yeah, I just did a video highlighting Chicago and one of the companies that I see as one of the strongest opportunities, not only to capture the Illinois and Chicago market, but also they have a national presence. I think absolutely there's a great opportunity there.
One of the things that happened just before Christmas and the congressional recess is to avoid a government shutdown, they passed a continuing resolution. And in that budget resolution, the House put in the implementation of the Safe Banking Law. That was struck from the compromise, and nobody in the House seemed to push back to want it in there, and so it wasn't in the funding bill. And then during Christmas holidays, the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee raised real concerns about whether or not they should consider the Safe Banking Bill, because he had concerns that were no restrictions on the amount of THC per product. So people who are writing about this are now worried that the safe banking situation, or a banking situation for the cannabis industry. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have long thought that the Safe Banking Act, while I'm a full supporter of it, I don't believe that it's going to get passed in its current form or in the current environment. And so I've said that 2019, I didn't think it was going to get passed. And then I didn't see a road for it in 2020 either. And I'm not surprised. So it was Senator Mike Crapo from Idaho. And his concerns were, unreasonably high levels of THC, marketing to children, a lack of research on cannabis, and then cartels laundering money. And so those are really, those are all points that when you say them, you get public support, because of course the public isn't going to support marketing cannabis to children or giving cartels an avenue to launder money. But those aren't reasons to stop banking support. Those are things that you need provisions in there to make sure that it's regulated and that it's safe and that it's done appropriately and with the ethics that we all believe in. And so his concerns were just basically just buzzwords that he was throwing in there to try and justify his lack of support for the Safe Banking Act.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth. When you were saying you didn't think it was passed in 2020, are you saying that you don't think it will pass, period, under its current form?
Yeah, just with the current form and the environment, I just don't see a road for it to getting passed. Things change, they evolve. And so I'm just saying, based on what I'm seeing right now, I don't think it's going to pass.
Okay. I think there are four more states that are considering ballot initiatives for recreational. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about the momentum in making more and more of the medical states recreational. Is there a lot of pressure to do that?
Yeah, I think the momentum's great. We just keep moving in the right direction. And so they're not all going to be victories. But, every time this comes up for a vote, what you do is you have a huge portion of the population that has to reconsider exactly what's going on. And so as this whole thought and idea evolves within the American consciousness, every one of those opportunities, even if it doesn't pass, is a growing opportunity. And so I'm fully in favor of the move forward. My home state of Florida is considering a recreational bill. So, I'm excited about that. I'm not sure if it's going to pass yet. I don't have all the data. I don't think the bill is fully laid out yet, but I like to see things happening, and that way people are talking about it and the conversation moves forward.
Our state, because I live in Florida too, our state has the reputation of doing constitutional amendments as opposed to real laws. Is the recreational going to be a constitutional amendment, or is there going to be a referendum and the legislature will be responsible if it passes to implement the rules, or do we know yet?
I'm not exactly sure on that yet.
Okay. So let's take a look in the time we have left. Let's take a look at where you see the opportunities today for investing in the cannabis market.
Yeah. So the two areas that I see is in the Canadian market. We now have the launch of Cannabis 2.0. So that includes edibles, vapes, and infused beverages. And what I'm most excited about is what these infused drinks are going to look like. And really what I want to see is feedback from people that are using them. And so those really, we have yet to see the data out on that. So the products have been named in many cases. And so we're going to see that launch and roll out very shortly in the coming weeks. And so I'm really watching that to see what happens. I've already kind of done my analysis of all the companies. So really, it comes down to the products and the branding behind it. And then stateside, basically just looking at the highest quality multi-state operators. And so I'm looking at companies that are basically, they have a path to profitability. So spending is in line with their growth. And so that means that they're not spending ridiculous amounts to support a lavish lifestyle for CEOs and top management, but instead they're putting that money into building facilities and dispensaries that will generate profit for them in the future, and that show discipline in how they raise the capital in order to do that. And so those are basically high quality multi-state operators within the U.S. are the ones that I'm keeping my eye on closest.
I want to go back, I could, Anthony, in the few minutes we have left, to go back to the infused beverages. We know that Coca-Cola is in the growing business. We know that Altria, the Philip Morris brand, is in growing. Miller Brewing is in growing. I think Constellation Brands is in growing. What's the magic of putting cannabis in alcohol?
Yeah, so right now the problem is that when they infuse the drinks, oftentimes it's similar to edibles, where it takes a very long time for it to take effect. And that's not what people have grown accustomed to culturally. We're used to alcohol, where the effects start to become apparent within 10 minutes. And then, of course, it takes longer for it to fully leave your system. But waiting an hour or 2 hours for your drink to take effect simply isn't acceptable. Our culture isn't going to shift to accommodate that. But what we can do is these companies are researching and looking at ways that they can expedite that using catalysts or changing the compound ever so slightly so that the effect comes on much faster. And then, of course, we now have a product that fits into the giant alcohol market and is now a competitor for that. And so the growth potential there is just huge.
Is there anybody working in the U.S. For infused alcohol?
Yeah, so right now it seems like there's smaller brewers that are attempting it. There was actually an infused beer competition in 2019, and I read the reviews from it, and they weren't all that great. So the winner was actually, basically it was a spiked seltzer. So it was like a seltzer type drink that had THC in it, and none of the beers did very well. But what the U.S. big producers of alcohol are looking at is setting it up in Canada to develop these products and to get market data. And then once the U.S. legalizes, then they can move it into there. And same thing with Europe and Africa and South America, Australia, all the other markets in Asia as well.
Well, thank you so much. We are unfortunately out of time. It's a good thing that you're a reoccurring guest. In the few moments that we have left, how can people get a hold of you, Anthony?
Yeah, so probably one of the easiest ways is just to go to YouTube and then search my name, Anthony Planus, and then you'll see my weekly marijuana market update.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking today to Anthony Planus, a regular contributor to the American Cannabis Conversation. And you can hear this show, and if you missed any part of it with Anthony or previous shows, by going to W420RadioNetwork.com. And go to the archive section. Anthony, thanks for joining the conversation today.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
This is Dan Perkins, host of America's Cannabis Conversation, and I want to hear from you. Send me an email. Tell me what you like about our show, what you don't like about our show, what kind of guests you'd like to hear from, and are there subjects that are important to you that we're not discussing? Let us know. Go to W420RadioNetwork.com and send us an email. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and we have a returning guest, Jared Mirsky, who was on our show earlier, and he's going to take a different tack for his today. He's told us in the previous show what you can get at W420RadioNetwork.com and go down and listen to a previous episode. And when he talks about the things that he's done in his career in this industry, I want to, because we have a lot of people who listen to the show who are thinking about getting into the business as a dispensary owner and operator, I want to pick his brain, help pick his brain for you, my listening audience, about the challenges. So, Jared, the business today, by the way, welcome back to the show. The industry has seen phenomenal growth, not without pain and anguish, and changes in the law and licensing and everything else. When we decided to do this show, one of the things we did is we did some survey work, and we found that a lot of people were very interested in wanting to own a dispensary. They wanted to be able to interact with people, help solve problems, and make them feel good about working with people. So what I want you to do is talk about, okay, I'm Joe Smith, and I want to start a dispensary. Why do I need you, and what can you do for me?
Well, I would say that most people, I would say that most people don't really come in thinking they want to launch a dispensary. I think that most people want to just get into the cannabis industry and figure out, okay, where do I fit? And I think that goes along with entrepreneurship as a whole, given the fact that it really all stems from what is it that you're going to be ultimately the most passionate about? I don't think I would be passionate about having a dispensary, right? I think I would be passionate exactly where I'm at, building brands for myself, but for clients and partners alike. And so it really stems from passion. So, you know, the first piece of advice that I give anybody that's looking to enter into the cannabis industry and asking themselves, what is it that I might even be passionate about? Because some people just have no clue. I say go to a conference, right? Network, meet people, talk to as many different people as you can, ask as many different questions as you can, and really just start to learn the market as a whole so that you can understand what the ecosystem of the industry looks like from the inside out. But, you know, for those that are often looking to get into, let's say, the dispensary and cultivation side, most states and countries, for the most part, are vertically integrated. I think Washington State is literally the only state that lacks vertical integration, which means you can only either A, grow, or you can only sell. And so it's a little weird. But then you've got also the distribution license side. So you have to ask yourself, you know, what area of the industry do you want to be in? Do you want to touch all sides? And that'll often dictate, you know, what state you want to operate in. So looking at the states then that are not nearly as oversaturated as others, you'll want to identify, okay, is this something I want to do with the state that I'm living in, or is this something that I want to do in a new state, right? Or a state where, you know, the industry is, you know, just sprouting, if you will. But then looking at that, you have to ask yourself, okay, knowing that I want to do cultivation, do I want to license? Do I want to build a brand, or do I want to license that with other cultivators that are perhaps already producing and distributing product? As where the other side of the coin is, you have to raise money, and now you've got to build this infrastructure yourself. In addition to that, you've got to support building, you know, not one but two brands, because you never want your retail store to be branded the same as your products. Otherwise, another retail store isn't going to want to sell your products because it's named the same as a retail store, which is ultimately their competitor. If that makes sense. So it's a really interesting place to be.
So, you know, it's that was a great tip you gave people. If you're gonna be in the distribution and the retail side, your product, the product itself should not carry the same name as the store. If you're looking
to cultivation, yes. Cultivation, yeah, not distribution. Cultivation, yeah, yep. Mm-hmm.
I recently had an opportunity to interview a gentleman who has many, many dispensaries in California. And he feels that the biggest opportunity in the cannabis industry right now is branding what you do and branding specific products as opposed to locations, because he thinks distribution of that product, if you can build a brand, will produce much higher reward than some of the other alternatives. Would you disagree with that?
I mean, I wouldn't agree nor disagree. I think that there are, I think that there are many approaches.
So what he was saying is that in his dispensaries now, he owns several dozen, and in his dispensaries, and he's also a grower, about 80% of the product that he sells in his stores, his dispensaries, are made by other companies, not him. And he's
Correct.
Looking to take yep. his products to other stores, and his products do not have anywhere any representation of the names of his dispensaries. And
that's good.
So I was looking at it from the standpoint it's almost as like the dispensaries are becoming like supermarkets, and the distributors, the packagers, are coming in and buying shelf space to display their wares.
Well, yeah, I mean that's exactly what's happening. But you do have states like Michigan where, for now, you're only able to produce your own products, right? And you're not able to sell other brands just yet through your dispensary storefront. So what do? Right? Do you build house brands and push that? Well, sure. Depending on what your revenue, or depending on, how much money you're able to raise, it sometimes makes more sense to build a house brand if you're trying to be frugal and just generate revenue. And I use frugal in a nice way, but, then you've got the side of like, okay, well, if I want to do this the right way the first time, what is the best approach, right? Well, it's, have your dispensary front, right, your retail front, named separate from your product, because, it's not going to be, it's not going to be anytime soon until, a brand gets to a position like Nike where, they have their own Nike store, right? People mm-hmm. often use that as an example. They're like, well, Nike has a Nike store. Why can't I just, it's product. Like, they're selling their own product and they sell in other retail stores. Well, Nike does it. Well, Nike didn't come out with the Nike store until long after they had already been selling in other retail stores. So it's not the same. You can't really compare it to that. At the end of the day, you want to make sure that these dispensaries are helping push your product sales. And again, they're not going to do it if it's named the same as your dispensary. But again, you can have a house brand and promote both. It's more expensive on the branding side.
For our listeners who are not able to write as fast as Jared can speak, you can hear this interview and other interviews by going to W420RadioNetwork.com. I think there's a 900-pound gorilla hanging out there in the woods somewhere waiting to pounce, and that is companies like Coca-Cola and Miller Brewing and other companies are acquiring growing lands and are thinking about building infusion products. And Altria owns a big chunk of vape and other things that big corporate international corporations are buying already into the space. They're doing it quietly, and they're not really pushing anything yet. They're waiting for the federal government to change the status of cannabis to no longer being a controlled substance. I wonder if those organizations, once that happens, are going to be have a significant influence on the direction of the business.
Yes, they absolutely will. And to say that they're doing it quietly, I don't think that's possible, given the fact that they're a public company and they have to report everything. And the press picks up on that like nobody's business. So in terms of the products and what they're doing there on the developmental side, yes, completely agree, Dan. Yep, they're certainly keeping that area of their operation quiet, no doubt about that. But, as far as the strategic moves that they're making in the industry and the splash they'll have, it's going to be big. It's going to be, companies like that continue to swallow up, much smaller organizations. But again, that's why it's extremely important to build your brand the right way the first time, because for those that are getting in the space, you know, looking to sell their company in 3 to 5 years, they need to be able to construct, they need to be able to understand how to construct a brand. Again, beyond aesthetic, there's IP, there's legal aspects to consider. There's, does your name mean the same thing in every country, or do you own the rights to the name you have, and is it trademarked under cannabis? And yes, you can do that, right? You can federally trademark now under cannabis. Just ask Tom Zuber from Zuber Law. So there are a lot of opportunities to do some pretty amazing things in the space, but you need to approach it with expertise. And if you're not an expert, that's fine. That's why consultants exist.
So when you look at the branding situation, if we look at the market, as you pointed out right now, as you look at what's going on, we have a situation that because you can't ship product across borders, branding really is a state-by-state issue. It, at least at the moment, it can't be national, correct?
No, that's not necessarily correct. I mean, you can't ship from one state to another unless it's CBD products, which we also have a huge focus in. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it really just depends on what we're talking about, because you can license a brand in another state. You can license the IP in another state, the formulations, but no, you cannot cross borders with physical products.
So until we get rid of the controlled substance situation, money making in branding in terms of selling the product across state lines is not going to happen. You're going to have to, as you just pointed out, licensing or whatever, but you're not going to be able to manufacture in California and ship to Ohio under the current laws. And isn't the manufacturing of the product the most profitable part of the product?
Well, yeah, it's also the most expensive, depending on how you're looking at it.
Right. Well, we are unfortunately out of time. It's been a wonderful conversation. I thank you for giving us and our listeners some insight to a very important part of understanding this business, and that is branding, marketing, and what you need to do to make yourself competitive in the marketplace. And so, Jared, please tell our audience how we can get a hold of you.
Yep. You can find me at wickandmortar.com, wickandmortar.com. You can find me on LinkedIn as well as Instagram, Jared, at jared.mirsky.
America's Cannabis Conversation.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
This is Dan Perkins, and we're about halfway through today's conversation. I hope you have found the people interesting and helpful. In case you didn't hear all of the interviews in today's conversation, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com after 5:20 p.m. to listen to this show. If you missed any of our previous shows, or you want to hear a particular show again, you can go to the archives and download a missed show anytime that's convenient for you. Our goal is to bring a high-quality program that is both entertaining and informative. For those of you who are in the industry, we hope we can continue to be your voice, telling the people of America the benefits of this amazing all-natural product. We have been surprised at the willingness of important people to come into this new program and talk about the challenges and opportunities in the cannabis industry. It's hard to believe that it's been 23 years since cannabis was made legal in California. I think the next 23 years might be even more exciting than the first 23. One more thing before we get back to the conversation. Should you have a question or a comment, please contact us at contact@W420RadioNetwork.com. That's contact@W420RadioNetwork.com. And now, back to the conversation.
Joining the conversation today is our old friend Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association. He's our Director of Communications and has been with us many times. Happy New Year to you, Morgan.
Thanks, you too.
Let's get started. I'm looking at what happened prior to the Christmas vacation or holiday vacation. There was some discussion that and hope that perhaps the continuing resolution would address the House passage of the Safe Banking Bill, but nothing was ever said. And then during the Christmas holiday, the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee indicated that he's got some problems with the Safe Banking Bill, especially as it relates to the quantity of THC that can be in products. So give us your update on what's going on.
Well, we were really hoping to get a markup on the Safe Banking Act in the Senate Banking Committee before the end of the year, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But we were all pretty much taken aback by the concerns that Senator Crapo expressed and the suggestions he wanted to see in any banking legislation that would move forward through his committee, particularly a suggested 2% THC cap on any products that were being produced that would be banked. And frankly, that's completely unworkable. So, we're disappointed by that. However, Senator Crapo has said that he's accepting comments right now, and we are working with a pretty broad coalition of associations and businesses to give him accurate information and let him know that these concerns are not really appropriate to either put onto banks or to include in this narrowly tailored legislation. So hopefully we can get that information to him and make sure that any bill that moves forward in the Senate is very similar to the version that was passed in the House so that we can get a bill to the president's desk. I think it was pretty interesting that Senator Kevin Cramer, from a Republican from North Dakota, actually said that he recognized that the 2% cap was unworkable and was going to be working with both Senator Crapo as well as Senators Gardner and Merkley, who are the main proponents of this bill in the Senate, to address any of the concerns that the Senate Banking Committee has and make sure that it gets a markup as soon as possible.
Morgan, I understand what you're saying. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you're more tied into Washington than I am. You used in the early part of this, starting of this conversation, that you were surprised at Senator Crapo, and we should remind the audience that he's the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee. Who was driving this behind him? Do you have any idea?
We have no idea where he came up with this number. It's not one that I've seen before in any discussions about this issue or anything that's being promoted by the organizations that are opposed to legalization and particularly opposed to the Safe Banking Act. So we're really not sure at this point where he's getting these figures from or where that number came from. But we're going to be working as hard as we can over the coming weeks to make sure that he gets accurate information.
It would seem to me, as an interested novice, how can you legislate in a natural product a specific outcome of the amount of THC in the product?
Well, that's the thing. THC caps are a little bit ridiculous to begin with, but there are several states that actually do have caps on the amount of THC that is in a product, and that can be altered through specific genetic breeding as well as through dilution of products. It's very difficult to do that with flower, but if you have, say, a vaporized product or an oil or a topical of some sort, you can dilute it to the point where it only has below a certain level of THC. But I think that the important part to consider is that the vast majority of cannabis products available in state legal markets have more than 2% THC. So putting a cap like that would basically only allow hemp to be banked. And also, banks shouldn't be in the position of having to verify whether or not their clients are only producing 2% THC products. considering that products with much higher levels of THC are legally allowed to be produced in those states, you know, it puts banks in a very difficult position and would basically eliminate the possibility of anything except for hemp being banked in the future.
I agree with you. I can't imagine bankers accepting the responsibility of having to police the THC content of the products of the institutions that they're doing banking services for. So that when this came out over the holidays, there were several stories that came out that suggested that there probably will not be any action on the bank safety issue in 2020. Do you agree? Or disagree?
I don't think that that's necessarily accurate. You know, it might have delayed things a little bit, but you know, we're still very hopeful that we're at least going to get a markup in the Senate Banking Committee, hopefully in the next couple of months, and then we're going to see where we can go from there. You know, the chances of getting anything done in Congress are being made much more difficult because of national and international politics and the presidential election, as well as a number of congressional elections, particularly in some pretty contentious states. So, you know, I think that we got to be cautiously optimistic about the chance of actually getting many bills passed in 2020. But that being said, it's certainly not an impossibility.
Does the meeting calendar and the state and federal campaigns, which will take a lot of people out of Washington, make it more difficult to try and pass this legislation in 2020?
You know, I think that that's something that we're still trying to work out. It's clearly going to interfere with the ability to have markups and hearings. But I don't think it's going to make it an impossibility. And also, I think that, you know, the fact that a lot of lawmakers and elected officials are going to be back in their home states, many of which are considering cannabis legislation or ballot initiatives this year, is going to keep the issue at the forefront.
I was just going to ask you the question as to whether or not legalization and expansion of cannabis will be an important issue in the coming general election.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's already a huge part of the conversation when it comes to the Democratic candidate field. I think that it's whenever the primaries are done, it's going to continue to be an issue in the presidential debates. And it's certainly going to be on the minds of Congress when we're looking at, dozens of states that are going to be considering adult use or medical bills and initiatives.
We're speaking with Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association. If we look at what's going on and we see that we're going into an election and you've got a lot of interest, what are the prospects now? I think it's 33 states have medical, 11 have now with the addition of Illinois, 11 have and the district have recreational. What's the outlook from your organization as to the prospects of more states coming on board with recreational?
I think it's very likely, particularly since a number of states are going to be considering initiatives. In fact, in South Dakota, it's already qualified for the ballot. In New Jersey, there's going to be a referendum going to the voters through the legislature. It appears likely that states like New York, Delaware, Connecticut are going to be addressing this through their legislatures. So we're pretty confident that we're going to add some more states this year. How many, I think, is a question that it's still too early to really weigh in on.
I saw I did a story on the program today about what happened on New Year's Day when Illinois opened up for sale and the rush of people that were the cross into Illinois to buy. And I was talking to a publicist this morning who lives in Illinois and close to the border of Indiana. And he was standing in line a long time to try and get something. And the person next to him said he was from Indiana. And there are reports from all the states around Illinois that people are crossing the border to come in to buy. And they had land office businesses. Some places ran out of product, and there were long wait times. So there clearly still seems to be a significant interest, but investors seem to be not interested or as interested as they were in the cannabis market as far as opportunities for profits. big California recently who was going to cut taxes, reverse themselves and increase taxes. And I know you've talked on the show many times about taxes. What other things are going on out there that are adversely affecting the ability of this industry to grow?
I mean, well, aside from outdated federal policies that limit access to banking and set a huge federal tax rate, and the fact that cannabis is still illegal at the federal level, just looking at it from sort of an investor position, I think that a lot of people that don't really necessarily understand the cannabis policy issue, they see stories about there being lots of opportunity in this field, but sometimes overlook the fact that this is a commodity that is still, like, not only heavily regulated where it is legal, but still illegal at the federal level, and that as an evolving and complex marketplace, you're not necessarily going to see the same sort of behavior that you might see in other legal commodities. And so I think that you know, investors jump in really excited, and then when they start to realize the unfortunate realities of the cannabis industry and about cannabis policy, they start getting a little bit nervous. And then when you know, some you know, bigger companies tend to concentrate too much on expansion and overextend themselves, then investors get scared and they pull their money back. You know, this is something that we've seen happen in waves. Basically, every time there's some sort of a major step forward in cannabis policy reform, and really, I think that could be fixed with investors really just thinking more about the long term.
Well, you know, one of the things that was dominating the headlines and now has gone quiet for a period of time, and that was the vaping issue. And I know your organization was very much involved in that. Where are you today?
In the process of developing some resources that will provide more clarity on the issue, as well as recommendations for regulatory control at the state and federal level. But I think that overall, not only has the CDC seen a real slowing down in newly reported cases, but they've been narrowing in on at least some of the more likely proximate causes. You know, it's probably something that has multiple causes, but they've narrowed it down to, you know, vitamin E acetate being the most common cause, and there's been a ton of coverage about that. So, you know, even illicit market producers are probably being smart and no longer adding that to their products. But, you know, certainly the legal market really hasn't been using that that product at all for the entirety of its existence. And, you know, we're starting to have more conversations about making sure that there are more clear regulations regarding what sort of additives you're allowed to put into vaporizers. But also, I think that this the media coverage has been doing a much better job at laying the blame for this where it lies, on the illicit market and on outdated prohibition policies. And consumers are starting to wake up to that fact.
You've said many times on this show that you were concerned about, especially in California, the illegal market. And I saw recently where they had a week-long series of raids, and they found thousands of illegal cartridges, that vaping cartridges that they confiscated along with cash and hundreds of thousands of dollars of product. Was that a one-time event, you think, Morgan, or is California finally serious about doing something about the illegal market?
You know, it's tough to say in terms of their enforcement policy, but I think that if they were really serious, they would start eliminating some of the barriers to entry to becoming a regulated business, start decreasing the tax rates, and start making it easier for people to take part in the regulated industry so that we could start displacing the illicit market.
A lot of the states that got into the cannabis business saw it as a significant source of tax revenue. Colorado has brought in billions of dollars, and other states have brought in lots of money. And I'm wondering if the attraction of the generation of revenue that this business can produce is in conflict with the regulatory environment that needs to get done to make this a more broader product.
Well, I think that the problem is that lawmakers really want to you know, squeeze blood from a stone, and they are in danger of taxing the industry to death. It seems maybe a little bit counterintuitive, particularly to government officials that are not really used to cutting taxes. But in the long run, lower tax rates for legal cannabis will make it easier for these businesses to compete with illicit operators, which will mean there are more taxable sales taking place in the legal and regulated market, and in the long run will generate far more tax revenue.
Somebody once said that about income taxes, too. We've been speaking with Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, a regular contributor to here at America's Cannabis Conversation. And if you missed any portion of Morgan's interview, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, listen to this show, and listen to archive shows and look and see where Morgan's been on and listen to him and listen to other people. Morgan, thank you for your time today.
Thanks again for having me.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
We're at Emerald Cup 2019. Rich Walkoff for the 420 Radio Network with 15-year NBA veteran and world champion Matt Barnes. Matt, great career. You got a new thing going on, and you're entering the cannabis world.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, I started when I was 14, and I used through my high school career, my college career, my NBA career. And, you know, post-career, it was something that interests me. And, you know, I kind of jumped in feet first. I have a company called Seven Leaves in Sacramento. By January, we'll have 1,000 lights, so we'll be one of the bigger indoor grows. And then I'm actually launching also my own individual line called Swish in about a month, which will be a whole SKU of CBD products and then THC products as well.
So you're defying a lot of the preconceived notions about if you get high, you're a stoner, you don't have your together.
Yeah.
And obviously, there are many professional athletes and elite athletes. So tell me how the paradigm has changed.
You know, I've kind of always marched, you know, to my own beat anyway. I think people who follow sports knew that. But I knew it was something that helped me throughout my life and definitely in the NBA. And, you know, obviously hats off to the Major League Baseball. You know, they just taken it off the banned substance list. So I hope, you know, the NFL and the NBA are soon behind that. But I think they're just kind of waking up. You know, they're realizing that, you know, a ton of guys continue to get in trouble, be fined, or even lose their careers over it. There must be something to it. Why are all these elite athletes doing it? So, you know, hats off to the leagues that really kind of started to dive into it and really learn about the plant and not live by the old stigmas about the plant.
Now tell me how you played under the influence, if you will. Was it transcendent? Was it performance enhancing? Did it illuminate things that were not there otherwise?
No, it allowed me to focus. You know, like it wasn't something that I would do right before I went on the court, but you know, throughout the process of the day, you know, if I had a game, I would go to shoot around in the morning, come home, smoke a joint, take a nap, get up, shower, eat, and go to the game. You know, so within a 6-hour window, I had smoked, but not necessarily right before the game. But like I said, it was something that allowed me to take a great nap. It allowed me to focus and concentrate. Obviously, it's an anti-inflammatory as well, so it always just kind of had me ready for the game.
Yeah, and you're not alone, because there are many guys, maybe the majority of guys in the NBA and other sports, are partaking.
Yes.
Either recreationally or therapeutically or both.
Yes, no, I would completely agree. You know, I would only like to kind of speak on myself, but I think it's no secret that there are other guys using it. And like I said, unfortunately right now they're being fined and suspended and losing their careers over, which is unfortunate. So I hope that we're in the, you know, the process of change right now.
Yeah, well, you mentioned back in 2007 the We Believe Warriors that stunned the world and took down the number one seed Mavericks. First time an 8 seed had ever done that in NBA playoff history. And in the celebratory mode, you shared a story here at the Emerald Cup. Oh, maybe you could paraphrase.
Yeah. You know, we had won game 6 against the Mavericks and, you know, went back to a teammate's house to kind of celebrate a little bit. Our head coach, Don Nelson, lived on the top floor of the building. And we went up there and, you know, he told us that Woody Harrelson was rolling doobies in the back and go partake. And we kind of looked at each other like, what the hell? And we went to the back and kind of partook, you know. So Nelly's kind of always been ahead of the curve in life in general, not just sports. So that was just another example of it being that.
Yeah, and I understand that Snoop Dogg got in the mix in that one too.
Yeah, you know, Snoop was in town for the game. We ended up, after we left Nelly's, we went to the club to hang out a little bit. And then I hit Snoop up. He told us to come by, and, you know, we went back to his hotel and smoked some more, you know. So it was one of those crazy nights. It only fit, you know, after we made NBA history, we had a hell of a night after.
Yeah, no, and the league doesn't view it the same way. It's frowned upon, maybe not as severely as other leagues do, but you've had some run-ins with the NBA about that, and it almost cost you your career.
Yeah, you know, it was something that in the NBA, they go by a three-strike policy. I had like 2.75 strikes in my time playing. You know, so it's just something that it happened. You know, the two tests I failed, it happens. You know, but luckily I was able to, you know, not get that third strike, which is, you know, five games, and the world knows, and it's a large fine. So, you know, I teetered the line of it. But like I said, even though I knew I wasn't supposed to do it, to me there was no alternative, because I'm not someone that's a big drinker or someone who takes opioids.
Yeah, and opiates are the de facto path for most guys. You get hurt, they pop pills. I mean, I was around the NFL for over 25 years, and the stories I heard were unbelievable. And it's probably no different in the NBA. It's a grind, and your body breaks down, and they give you pills to mask the pain and the symptoms, but it doesn't get to the cause, and it doesn't alleviate the problem.
No, not at all. You know, like I think you hit it on the head. It's a simple masking agent that is masking one thing and causing another long-term effect, whether it be breaking down, you know, important organs or getting you addicted to it. You know, but like I said, it's the big companies, these billion-dollar opioid or, you know, pharmaceutical companies that, you know, have a stranglehold on this. But like I said, I think we continue to, you know, make progress in that direction. And, you know, I hope that soon it'll change.
You know, tell me about the mindset playing high, how it might compare to otherwise.
It's really just a focus, you know, I mean, it's a mental focus that allows me to lock in. It allowed me to, you know, understand what the task at hand was, no matter what was going on. You know, I had kind of a hectic life off the court as well, you know what I mean? So I'm able to block out all the bullshit and for those 2.5 hours, focus on my job and try my best to do it as best as I could.
Well, Matt, you had a great run, and congrats on that, and look forward to hearing more about Swish. What's the focus of Swish?
So Swish will be, you know, my whole approach in this space is education. You know, my whole goal is to help change regulations in professional sports. So Swish will be a full line of CBD products, along with THC products. But like I said, continuing to educate, continuing to explain the benefits and the, you know, the educational side of why we use it and really removing the stigma of high. You know, we want to remove that stigma and explain this is why we do it, this is when we do it, and this is what it helps with. And I think the more and more people that are able to do that, it's going to continue to help raise awareness.
All right. Well, the Emerald Cup is happy to have you here, Matt Barnes, NBA champ. Rich Walcott for the 420 Radio Network.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
This is Dan Perkins, and thank you for joining the conversation. We hope you enjoyed the conversation today and invite you to join us next week. By the way, you can go to our website, www.americascannabisconversation.com. and download previous shows, but also on the website, you'll be able to see who our guests are going to be next week. So go to the website, americascannabisconversation.com, download shows, and look who's going to be on next week. This is Dan Perkins, and thanks for joining the conversation.
Thanks thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.